It's that time of the year. Your vacation is coming up. You can already hear the beach waves, feel the warm breeze, relax, and think about work. You really, really want it all to work out while you're away. Monday.com gives you and the team that peace of mind. When all work is on one platform and everyone's in sync, things just flow. Wherever you are, tap the banner to go to Monday.com.
Hi everyone, this is Chris Barrow from the Naked Gaming Podcast with a special episode of the podcast now focusing on the world of chess and the computer algorithms that are now so powerful that a grandmaster would have almost no chance of beating it. How am I supposed to do it? We were inspired to make this episode after watching The Queen's Gambit on Netflix, which is the story of Beth Harmon's rise to the top of the chess world. Our guest for this episode of the pod is Natasha Regan, who's a woman international master at chess, has represented England and co-authored a book called Game Changer, which tells the story of an algorithm that can learn to play chess to an incredible level called Alpha Zero. If you could subscribe to the podcast, it would help us out. That's my opening gambit over. Enjoy.
When I started, I must have been about 8 years old, maybe even slightly younger than that. And my father had used to play a little bit of chess at university, but he didn't really play. And there was a chess book advertised on the back of a cereal packet. And so we ordered that. I'd always liked kind of puzzles and games. And I learned chess and I got instantly hooked on chess. And what I was very lucky with in my area was that there was this junior chess club. It was only a few miles from my house, and I would go every Monday night, wouldn't miss a single week, full of lots of kids my own age. And so it was the sort of fun aspect as well as the games aspect.
The social side of things came into it, I guess, at that point, did it?
Yeah. So it was and a little bit at school, but it was mainly this club. And so we'd all kind of be a similar level and improve together. And then what happened was we started going into competitions together as well. And so it was, very sociable. But also we would care about who would win each game at the club each week. And so we'd want to, we'd know who were the players who were in our league, and we'd have little competitions within the club. And we'd always want to make sure we won against the people we thought we had a good chance against. And so it was just really nice atmosphere. There was a chap called Rowley Newton who was the kind of coach of the club, and he would tell us where we were going wrong or what we were doing right. But most of the time, they just left us to play. And that's what we wanted to do, just play against each other and learn ourselves what were the good moves and the bad moves and those tricky forks with the knights. That was what we'd always specialise on.
It's always something very satisfying when you can pull off a move, and it's almost like when you see something and you can obviously imagine positions and play ahead in chess quite a lot, and a lot of these computer algorithms that I want to come onto, they're essentially processing as many moves as they possibly can in a certain time and working out the best eventual outcome.
When you're a kid, you like to think of these little traps, like if the opponent doesn't see it, then you can get this trap. And you're calculating ahead like that. And then as you get to a competitive level, then it's not really traps you're going for, but you're still thinking ahead. But it's then, can you kind of steer the game in the direction you want it to go and get towards the positions you, either the good positions or positions that you like to play.
Like the ones that you've kind of learned patterns of. And I guess there's a lot of talk, and actually in this Netflix series, about aggressive play and kind of workmanlike play and different styles. And I guess people like watching the aggressive and more flair kind of style of play. What's the difference between, like a workman style and somebody who has a bit of flair for chess? Is it that you're simply not just following the established patterns of a kind of a usual game until the middle end point of the game?
Well, it's funny because there have been kind of trends in chess, and so different periods of history, then you get very different styles of play. Certainly traditionally in the Romantic eras, there was lots of sacrificing material and getting very early decisive attacks. And that would partly be because the play was a little bit weaker in those days. Mm. And so you were able to achieve it. There was also a difference in strength between the strongest players and the people they're playing against. And so your opponent might bring the queen out too early and you could gain a lot of time attacking it and then get these kind of brilliant attacks with lots of sacrifices. Then there was kind of a period in history where you would have a bit more of a solid style. There was things like the pawn is the soul of chess and you build up these pawn structures and it's a little bit more positional. I'm thinking of positional players moving a lot forward in time then, someone like Karpov in the 1970s. And he was renowned for getting a small advantage in the game and then maybe, you know, just building up the advantage very, very slowly, very positionally, and there's nothing the opponent could do. And then around that time, there was another very exciting player, Garry Kasparov, and mm-hmm. And that match was big, big news, the sort of exciting attacking player of Kasparov against Karpov's positional play. You also had Bobby Fischer, the very famous American player, world champion, who kind of sparked off a lot of interest in chess in the 1970s. And he, apart from being a very exciting character, he also had this kind of open and attacking style of chess play, quite a sort of simple style, positional, but direct and against the king. And then sort of more recently, you've got Magnus Carlsen, current world champion. And I mean, he is a good attacker. He also, though, makes a lot out of small advantages and he can carry on playing a game forever. He just keeps, like, say, in an endgame, if he has any kind of advantage, he is just renowned for winning those because he has these little tricks in the endgame and can make a lot of his advantage. And then if you look in computer chess, you've also got these differences in style. So the computer that a traditional engine that had been the strongest, Stockfish, was a very, very good calculator and an extremely good defender. So whilst you might think you could kind of play against it, sacrifice your pieces and get some kind of plus, it would always pull something out of the bag and manage to successfully defend through pure calculation and also through the sort of understanding that people had built up.
It's a perfect moment actually to talk about AlphaZero, which I was reading about only yesterday, and I know you've written about this, obviously. It's kind of the latest computer program, and from my understanding is that it will sit down and learn a game in four or five hours with kind of the algorithms that it's built up. So it doesn't have to even be chess. It can be Go, which is another hugely popular game. And it will sit and kind of learn a game. And then at the moment, it's almost unbeatable. If you look at the rates that it has against older algorithms and models, it's winning like 80-90% of games or drawing the rest. So this is clearly a development, but what's different about this AlphaZero?
So it's very interesting. So this was built by DeepMind, and it was called AlphaZero because it had zero human knowledge in it. So the traditional engines might have been told the value of a queen is such and such, and a doubled pawn is worth such and such, and being near the king is such and such. AlphaZero was different. It was sort of self-taught. So it did know the rules of chess. What it did was then play 44 million games at lightning fast speed against itself and starting completely random. So at first, most of the games would end in a draw because it didn't really know anything about chess and couldn't really make any progress. But by chance, some games would be decisive. And then what it would do is then look at the kind of moves it had played where it had won, and try and play a little bit more like that. Look at the moves where it had lost because it was playing against itself and try and play a little bit less than that. And so then it would kind of play more and more and then build up a picture of what patterns were good for it and how to become stronger and stronger. And it was phenomenally successful. But as you say, it did it not just for chess. but also with Go and Shogi. So AlphaZero became the strongest computer and stronger than all humans at chess, Go and Shogi. And actually the journey was started with Go, where traditionally computers hadn't made such progress against humans. And DeepMind were quite brave. They challenged kind of the person that was considered the best Go player to a televised match, which took place in 2016. And it was big news, like millions of viewers around the world. In Korea, the match took place. So Korea, China and Japan are the countries that are really big for Go. And all the professionals thought that the human would win because Go is played on a much bigger board than chess. It's played on a 19 by 19 board. And so there's a lot of choice for each move. So the traditional approach for computers there of just calculating, they very quickly ran out of being able to do it just because of so many combinations. AlphaZero took a combined approach of kind of positional features and shape recognition, looking at what are the likely moves and then how does it evaluate the position after that. And it was able to get stronger where other computers hadn't been able to do it. And in the end, the match was 4-1 to the computer, which was called AlphaGo at the time. And there's this absolutely fantastic film about it. I highly recommend it, called AlphaGo. And it shows the story. It's got real footage from the match. And it just shows all the emotions, you know, coming back to chess, all the emotions of being a Go player or a chess player, of what you feel in tournament and winning and losing. And it's just a really fantastic film about the story of AlphaGo and the match against Lee Sedol.
Stop kidding around, Snake.
I wanted to ask you this because I know as a someone who's incredibly well respected in the chess world, as well as, you know, understanding this, how this kind of all works, does it spoil any of the games to have a computer that's almost unbeatable? Because I saw a quote from one, I think it's a Danish chess grandmaster, who said it's like playing against an alien. You know, it's just so good that you almost can't beat it as a human. But does that ruin chess? Does that ruin Go? Or does that, I suppose, become the aspiration for human players?
There's lots of things to that question, and it's kind of brought new possibilities that we didn't know about on the chessboard. I mean, actually, in chess, for a little while, computers have been stronger than humans. So there was famous match of Kasparov against Deep Blue. It was a two series match, and Kasparov won the first, and then Deep Blue won the second. So and then after that, computers have got a lot stronger. So kind of people are used to using computers as a tool to help them play chess, as opposed to trying to beat them anymore just because they're so strong. It does actually in our online world now, it's quite nice having the computers in terms of spectating chess, because you've got a lot of chess going on online at the moment. And what you can do watching a big tournament is, if you want to see whether Carlsen's winning his game, you can have a look kind of at the computer evaluation and see what the moves are. Or you can turn the computer off, because you can just turn it off, and just see what you think yourself on that. So it's quite nice for spectators to be able to kind of instantly follow a lot of games at once and look at what's interesting going on in those games. Also, top players use computers a lot in their preparation before the game. So they might be studying which openings to play. And even that is an art in itself of how best to use a computer to prepare for a game. Because you can find a position you're interested in playing and then get the computer to analyze it. The problem is you have to remember all that analysis. So it'll generate a stack of outputs about what moves to play. You won't necessarily, even the top players won't necessarily be able to remember all of that. So the skill is in kind of setting the computer on a position where it can kind of teach you the ideas, or you can remember, you have to set it at the level where you can kind of remember what the outputs are. The other thing, though, with AlphaZero and with the traditional computers is this different in style. So AlphaZero might look for these positions where it's going to get a sort of a slow build up of an attack or a positional advantage. It can sacrifice lots of things. The traditional engine is a bit more calculation heavy, can work out a precise calculation sequence. What's interesting to do is play the two against each other. And so you can see this clash of styles, and you can say you're interested in a particular position from the white side. You could play, have AlphaZero playing white and Stockfish playing black. Then you could switch it all round. It wouldn't be AlphaZero, actually, that's to be accurate. It'd be LilaZero, which is a kind of open source version, basically using the same techniques to program it as AlphaZero was. And LilaZero is now extremely strong. Actually, there is a computer chess world championship going on at the moment. So top chess engine championship. And that's LilaZero, which is... The one basically designed like AlphaZero against Stockfish. So they're those two are playing it now, and they've been set lots of different openings to play. So you can kind of see what their take is on various different positions, and that's a lot of fun to follow as well.
I imagine that there is actually a huge it's a huge resource there, because watching this, the Queen's Gambit, which is one of the things that's launching chess back into huge popularity, maybe even to front pages of newspapers like it was in the 70s, which we could get there again. Is the fact that you don't now have to sit on a telephone line to four other kind of grandmasters who are all helping you to plan your moves, and actually you can use this computer as an aid, actually just much easier for everybody.
It does help access, because before you might have to know the right people or be from the right country in order to have access to the best resources, whereas now it's a little bit more even, because pretty much everybody will have access to the computers, and you can then use that to help you study.
Well, you can just play online as well. There's something that's different from when I was growing up. You can type in online chess, and within 5 seconds, you're playing a game. I did that yesterday. I couldn't believe it.
It's amazing, isn't it? Yeah. And you've got this. You've got a variety of sites you can use. You can pick your time control. You can find someone of similar strength to you. You can try your luck against someone who's stronger than you. It's absolutely amazing. 24 hours a day, whenever you feel like it, and you don't have to travel to that person or anything like that. So it's just so much better access. And also, if you've only got half an hour to play chess, you can still do it. And you can play, if you're depending on what speed you like to play, you can play a few games in half an hour, come back when it suits you and play again. So it's very nice for people. We've all got, even though we're locked down, we've all got busy lives still. And still you can kind of time your chess playing when it suits you. And you can always get a game, yeah.
When our chessboard eventually arrives after this huge delay, because obviously it's so popular, I'm going to be playing my wife at home. What tips can you give me or her to kind of try and become better than just a beginner? Because I think we know the moves of the board, and I've played a bit as a kid, but what are some of the ways of improving your game that are kind of to start with quite easy?
So there's kind of tactical ideas, I suppose, and positional ideas. So tactics is kind of making sure your pieces don't get taken unexpectedly and that sort of thing. And for that, it's quite nice to do puzzles of the right level for you. It might be is there a checkmate in one in this position? And you can, and there's a lot of this online, so you can kind of find puzzles and just practice them. And actually, some of the really top players have got hooked on doing puzzle after puzzle and trying to improve their rating on the puzzles. So that's nice for tactics. Playing lots of games is always going to help. Watching games is there's lots of competitions on. Some of them are commentated, which can help your understanding. And then there's also Books you can read about strategy.
Well, tell us about your book, because I know you co-authored this book, and it's been doing really, really well. And I'm imagining loads of people are now thinking, I want a book about chess, about the story of chess and its developments, as well as positional play. So the one that you co-authored, give us a flavour of that.
I co-authored this with English Grandmaster Matthew Sadler. And we wanted to bring sort of both the story of AlphaZero and also the examples of its games in chess. So it's called Game Changer, published by New in Chess. And so the first part of the book, it has an interview with Demis Hassabis, the CEO of DeepMind, about how he runs his AI program. And we sort of talked also with people who work there about AlphaZero. And then you've got a bit about how AlphaZero thinks.
Yes.
it's kind of about its algorithms and its neural nets. Then we also have, and kind of the bulk of the book is a whole load of chapters on themes from AlphaZero's play. So AlphaZero can't describe to us, you have to put your rook on an open line, that sort of thing.
You need to interpret what's
exactly happening. You need to interpret what you see in the games. Right. And my co-author, Grandmaster Matthew Sadler, he played through all these games and was pulled out themes of what's happening in the play. One big thing it did a lot more than the top players at that time was push its H pawn, so the far pawn, which you're told actually as a beginner, and it's rightly so, you're told not to do that.
Yeah.
Push that at first because you've got to get control of the center, whatever. What AlphaZero does is gets the control of the center, sorts its position out, and then uses this H pawn for an attack. So we did a chapter on the advancing this H pawn to make an attack. And what's really lovely now is that loads of the top players have started playing it. So, for example, Magnus Carlsen and lots of the other players have started doing these AlphaZero type attacks. So we've got a chapter on that, a chapter on... AlphaZero sacrifices pawns a lot. It also kind of does it lines up a rook and a bishop against the king, brings in a knight and then pushes his h-pawn up the board. And does its attacks this way. And that was how it was getting a lot of these wins against Stockfish. So we've got all these games and then also parallels to historic players and how, for example, Kasparov played a game similar to an AlphaZero game. And so it sort of shows how human understanding is developed along with the computer understanding. I mean, another fascinating thing actually is on the openings it chooses to play. So like the first few moves of a game. And DeepMind published was also some snapshots of as it taught itself what openings it was trying out, and you could see that they started off these not very good openings at all, and then it kind of picked what its favourite ones were. So Bobby Fischer has a famous quote about e4, so your king pawn, best by test, he says. Actually, AlphaZero doesn't choose e4; it chooses d4 as its first move, or knight f3. And it goes for a slightly more positional game, I suppose, and then turns it into an attack. But the other thing is it's sort of discovered independently some of these openings that are regularly used by the top players and that might have only been discovered in the last 20 years or so. It does these. So there's this famous drawing kind of line called the Berlin Defense, and AlphaZero also plays this Berlin defense that was discovered by Kramnik, and so there's all these openings that it has played that are also current in top chess. It's also come up with sort of new ideas that the top players are trying out.
Computers are essentially changing the face and the nature of chess in the sense that if a computer can confirm that an opening is good, because one of the things that daunted me slightly when I was trying to get a leg up on my wife on chess was that I looked up some openings, and there's so many openings, they're obviously popular ones, but there's a lot of kind of learning. But I guess if you've got the computer kind of suggesting that this works and is a good starting point, can you see that in the future, as computers get even more powerful, that actually there might be even newer openings that are discovered?
So definitely even now with the computers they're on now, they're making discoveries in opening theory. And it has affected the human game. So, for example, the top players now would not choose to just play one single opening and play that each time, what you'll see is a lot more variety. So for any of the top players, they'll have a big variety in which openings they learn and they know. So then they're always looking for new ideas in lots of different openings at the same time. They might have a team of people to help them, to help them interpret what the computers are coming up with. They'll also use the computers themselves and they'll try out lots of different stuff. So it's a very creative time, actually, within chess at the moment.
Is the Queen's Gambit any good? Because I've never played the Queen's Gambit as a...
You always see the Queen's Gambit as an opening, yeah.
Because it's quite... The TV series makes you think it's quite a rarely used opening.
No, it's a common one. Normally they don't take it, so the Queen's Gambit...
You can decline or accept it, can't you? That's the...
Yeah. So there's also a King's Gambit. There's a King's Gambit and a Queen's Gambit. The King's Gambit... I quite like the King's Gambit, actually, but this is considered really bad. So you're playing the pawn in front of the king, and then the pawn next to that, you let them take it, and you go for an attack. However, you do kind of weaken your king's position. Queen's Gambit's a different story. I don't really play this one, but it's considered very good. You play your pawn in front of your queen, and then the pawn next to that. Let them take it, but if they do, they can't usually hold on to the pawn, or else... they have to compromise their position a bit in order to hold on to that pawn. Also, they might decline it. The Queen's Gambit declined is quite a common opening in that then they don't take the pawn and then you get a normal game.
Yeah. Obviously, we're locked down and people are playing chess, I think, a lot more. How would you hope that would kind of just help to cope with this time? Because... you know, it's something that we're really looking forward to, just playing a board game.
No, it's definitely, it's lovely to be able to have this a sort of extra thing you're doing, and you could do it, you know, every day, set a time each day and play a bit and try and watch your strength improve. Really, really nice. And what we've also found, we because, of course, you can't play over the board anymore and everybody's missing that. Yeah. What we had recently was the online British Chess Championship. So we still managed to have a championship. It was sponsored by Kaplan. They kind of made that all happen. And I was one of the commentators for that event. And what was really nice was that actually there was like women's event, junior event, and actually in the women's event and following the Queen's Gambit maybe, but we found a lot of players who hadn't played for a number of years came back because it was online and convenient. Also, a lot of junior players played. And so we got actually a really very vibrant women's championship there with new players and old players mixing, all the age groups mixing. And one young girl, she called Nina Perch, she did brilliantly. She came second in the whole event. And so it was sort of allowed sort of new talent to shine in a way you actually might not have seen that with over the board chess. So it does give some new opportunities as well to people, and anyone as well could join in that event, and there were qualifiers, so you had a chance of playing against some of the really top players as well.
It's really interesting that actually, because it's an online environment, and my understanding is that, you know, when we're talking 50s, 60s, 70s, that women weren't really as welcomed in the game as perhaps you know nowadays. And I wonder if maybe that's something that you might have come up against in your career.
Even so, I mean even though it's welcoming for women, it's still very much the minority of players, and hopefully the Queen's Gambit will change that as well and make it a little bit more accessible. And I think online can also make it accessible for women who might be very busy with lots of things at once and actually can play, but only at certain times or only, you know, a certain number of times a week or whatever. So I think that's nice, and it's sort of encouraging for women players, and I think there's a lot of movement amongst male players as well to be more encouraging to female players, and that it does matter that there is participation there, and that it's a sort of welcoming environment, and not just male female, but for any groups of people. Yeah.
Well, I hope it goes from strength to strength, and yeah, we'll see who wins out of my wife and myself. But
yes, good luck to both of you. Make sure you enjoy it, obviously.
Yeah. Thank you so much for that, Natasha, and thank you for joining us.
Thank you.
Thanks to Natasha Regan, and her book Game Changer is available now. We'll be back soon with another episode of the podcast. In the meantime, thanks for listening. That's Check and Mate.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.